All right, well, welcome to our board meeting tonight, October. We are 6:10 and we are starting our October meeting. First thing that I wanted to do was just to give, I wanted to give a thanks to Esmeralda Torres. She has served for at least a few years as our faculty board rep. And so I've been informed that there's a change. And so at the same time as I wanted to thank Esmeralda, I also wanted to give a welcome to Jesse Hyatt, who has been a second grade teacher at our school since about the third year of operation, and seems like a very nice gentleman, and so he's going to be representing the faculty for us. So,
okay.
Glad to have him.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Bienvenido.
You're welcome.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Jesse. I was telling him there was a Mr. Freddy that used to teach second.
Yep, I used to teach.
They didn't believe me. Phil, let's go ahead and turn the time over to you and have you give the financial report for us.
All right.
Okay.
Let's see, the host will need to let me share.
I believe I did. Let's see if you can try.
Does the host disable participant screen sharing?
No. Okay, so.
I don't blame you.
It says multiple people sharing at the same time. Try it again.
All right, there we go. Let me go to her.
Cody, do we want to introduce ourselves before we get going?
Yeah, maybe we should. Should we just go around the horn?
Joy Lynn is joining us. And I believe that you have something going on at 7, Jolynn?
Yeah, I have a second board meeting to do training tonight that starts at 7.
So if we can push her up a little bit, we have it scheduled for 6:30, but if we can change some things, Cody, we can probably get her out of here so she can go to the other training.
Okay. So let's just kind of go around the horn. I'm going to tell you who I see in my screen if you just want to introduce yourself really quick. Tell her something about you and your connection to the school. Jesse, why don't we start with you?
Hi, everybody. I am Jesse Hyatt. I am the second grade teacher here at Esperanza Elementary, and this will be my fifth year teaching. So far, it's been a great experience. I love the age group, and it's been a learning experience, too, to learn and grow as how I can be a better teacher. So I'm really glad to be here, part of the team as well.
I'm Cody Case, and I think I first learned about dual immersion in the Valley in like 2009, and we've been looking for somewhere for my son to go. And actually, Juan Freddy, who's on the screen, hired me for my first job to do dual immersion. And now, after that, I changed to elementary, and I've served on the board, and it's been great. So I love dual immersion and all the things that it does for our kids in the Valley. Phil Shumway.
I'm Phil Shumway. I'm the treasurer of the board, and I have been connected with Alohi for quite a while, serving on another board with another possible 9010 school that we want to develop in Ogden. And then he's asked me to join this board. I just came on, I think, in January?
Yes, that's about right.
Yeah. So nice to meet you.
Alohio, words of wisdom?
I don't have too many right now. It's been a long day. But this is my 34th year in education. 1986, Washington Elementary School was my first year right out of college. So it's been a while.
Adi, what about you?
My name is Adi Moreno. I believe this is my third year at Esperanza Elementary. I am currently the administrative assistant. I come from a mortgage industry background, nothing to do with elementary school, but my twin girls are currently at Esperanza since kinder. They're now a fourth, and we wanted to follow them wherever they went. So I'm very happy at Esperanza, and I'm hoping to be there a few more years.
And her husband is a music teacher.
And my husband is a music teacher.
Ari, do you just say only a few more years?
Okay, more than that. quite.
Okay.
More.
Marty, what about you?
Jesse, I guess I'm the old timer on the call, both literally and in terms of my experience with Esperanza. I was one of the founding board members, and before that, I was involved with my old fifth grade teacher, Barbara McCulley, when we were brainstorming what came to be this cool, beautiful Esperanza school. I unfortunately can't boast any legitimate educational credentials like the rest of you, other than PTA and having assisted a whole bunch of my children's teachers with various things. But I've always had Latin envy, but no Latin blood or experience or culture or music or food or anything else. So this was my modest attempt to get a toe in the door. It's been a really awesome, beautiful, wonderful, engaging experience for me, and I've really come to love this place and these good folks that I get to hang out with from time to time. Welcome
and
to
he
our...
He keeps us rooted. He has a plethora of talents, and we've needed him since day one. So,
welcome. Glad to have you.
Juan, what about you?
Juan Freire. Same as Murray, I was, since the beginning of the school, as a founding and governing, and now a governing board member, and I started, I was invited to serve. I declined because I was very busy with my doctoral degree, but then I ended up accepting, and here I am. I love the school, and I think it's an amazing opportunity for Latino students, for all, but especially for Latino students. And yeah, and I'm a faculty member at Brigham Young University now, in the Department of Teacher Education.
Wonderful. And then Joy Lynn Lincoln, I don't know if many of us know you. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell us why you're here? And Phil, if you don't mind, I think Joy, we'll go ahead and just start with you after your introduction and have you give us a training.
Okay. My name is Joy Lynn Lincoln, and I'm with the Utah Charter School Association. I am their director of training. I've been involved with charter schools in the state of Utah since 2004, and I've served on a board for roughly 10 of the last 18 years? I know, I didn't do very good math there, 16 years. So 10 of the last 16 years I've served on a charter school board. And I have just a great love for policy. And the reason I'm here tonight is to do your annual open meeting training. So hopefully it's pretty familiar for you. And I will just go ahead and start. Can I share my screen?
Yes, I believe you can.
Okay, let's see if my technology says I can do that. Okay, can you see it?
Yes.
Okay. As they have questions, please go ahead and interrupt me to ask them, or I have put the chat where I can see it. Go ahead and type them in the chat, and I'll make sure and cover them as well. Again, this is open meeting training. Open meeting is a law that is required in Utah, and it makes sure that we're doing the business of the public in public. Part of the requirement of the law is that we actually hold a training for this annually. So make sure in your minutes tonight that you reflect that you actually did do your open meeting training. It makes it easy for your authorizer to see that you have checked that box. And it's really important that we do the business of the public in public because we're using really sacred taxpayer funds to educate students. So anytime we have a board discussing a topic, we need to make sure we're doing it in public. So we need to make sure we're avoiding social gatherings where we're talking about the school, or gathering in hallways or doing group emails. And we'll kind of cover some of those to make sure that we're doing it in public. So the most important thing is that we post our meetings and let the public know that we're having a meeting and that they can attend. And you guys did a great job of that. I saw on the public notice website that your meeting was posted earlier this week, so you far exceeded the 24-hour notice. And then you've got your annual schedule posted on your website, I believe I saw. Just making sure that board the public can schedule accordingly to be at board meetings. Usually we don't have a whole lot of public at our charter school board meetings, but occasionally you do. And then there's always the meeting junkies. That's what I like to think of myself as. You are one of two board meetings I will attend tonight, and I try to attend a couple every week. So it just makes it easy for those of us junkies to go ahead and calendar. Most meetings are open to the public. However, there are a few reasons you can close your meeting to the public and say, okay, public, we're not going to invite you to participate in this portion of the meeting. Anytime you close a meeting to the public, it has to open to the public first, just like you have right now. You have an open meeting, and then you motion to go into it. And there are a couple reasons you could do that, and I'm just going to go over the ones that charter schools typically use. The one we see most often is to discuss the character, competence, or mental health of an individual. Usually we utilize this when we're letting somebody go, we're evaluating them, or giving them a bonus, possibly hiring them. But we can talk about them in private. We don't need to, if they're on the, like, letting, we're letting them go, we don't need to air their grievances in public. We can do it as a strategy session to discuss pending litigation. And we have to have a firm belief that that litigation is going to occur. We can't just say, oh, we're going to talk about our school scores because some parent may be mad at us and decide to sue us, so we're going to talk about them in a closed session. You have to have a really reasonable assumption that you have pending litigation, but you can discuss that pending litigation so that you don't let the other side, by virtue of just reading your minutes, know your strategy. You can do it as a strategy session to discuss the sale of real property. I served at the board at Lakeview Academy, and they were planning on buying the piece of land right next to the school. And if they had started that strategy session in an open session, what was going to happen to that piece of land that was right next to the school?
It was going to get sold.
The price would go up. They would say, hey, a school's going to buy it. They've got deep pockets. Let's raise the price. So we were able to have that strategy session and come up with a fair asking or a fair purchase price to then offer them. We can do it to conduct security personnel devices and systems. You wouldn't want the whole world to know how to break into your school because the password to your security system is 1234 and it was found in the minutes of a meeting. So when we're talking about security, especially because the public entrusts us with their children, we can do those security devices and personnel and systems in a closed session. And we can investigate proceedings and criminal misconduct. So if there's a likelihood that there was some kind of criminal misconduct, which surely would never happen at your school, you could discuss that in a closed session. It's not to discuss a person that we're going to interview for an elected position. So if all of your board members are just appointed by the board, then you could do that in a closed session under the character competence of a mental health of an individual. But if it's a position that's elected by your school at large, then you cannot interview them during your open meeting. So the way we close a meeting is we have a motion, and we have to be pretty specific in our motion. We can't just say, I move to close the meeting according to Utah law. You need to kind of give a general reason to your closing it. So the motion would be, I move that we close our meeting to discuss pending litigation. And that would be sufficient. Or we discuss the competence and mental health of an individual. At that point, you need to have a two-thirds majority vote. So not a simple majority. And each board member has to roll call vote. So we have to go down the line. We can't just say all in favor, say aye. We go through each board member's name, and they say yes or no. And the minutes need to reflect that yes or no vote. Then you stop your recording and start a new recording. We never recommend keeping those recordings on the same running time period, because you might inadvertently post your closed session and your open meeting. So I always recommend using two separate devices so I never get them mixed up. I never accidentally post the wrong meeting. When you go into your closed meeting, then you would start that recorder again. You have to vote to reopen the meeting. And that's really tricky because they say you can't take any motions in a closed session. You have to do the public's business in public. So usually that's referred to as you come out of the closed session, and the first motion that is listed on your agenda is I move to come out of closed session. And a great place to see that is if you look at the State Charter School Board minutes, you can see how they list that motion on their agenda. And I always follow what my authorizer is doing. I find that is a really safe practice. So just make sure your minutes mirror their minutes when you're coming out of the closed session. And then you take any action. So I move to authorize so-and-so to carry out the action discussed in closed session. So you might say, I move that we authorize the board chair to go and talk, to carry out the action discussed in closed session. And then he would go talk to the person that the closed session was about. So you can be kind of vague in your motion at the end. But you do need to take that motion outside of the closed session. Is there any questions on that?
Sure, I had one question. So it sounds like how we should proceed with business is if we're going to have a closed session, we should do that at the beginning or the middle of our meeting and never at the end.
Actually, most schools like to do their closed session at the end of the meeting, because then the public can participate in all of the meeting up until that closed session, and then they leave. Rarely do they actually stay to see if any action comes out of it, although they could. The other place I see it is right at the beginning, and then do a time certain of when you think you'll come out of closed session on that next agenda item so that the public isn't just hanging out forever. So if your meeting starts at 6 o'clock, and you're going to go into closed session and you think it will be about 20 minutes, you might just have that first action or that next item on your agenda have a time certain of 6:30. That way the public has a good idea of when that they could observe the meeting. Does that answer the question?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Great.
Okay. And then any item that's discussed in a closed session is to be kept confidential. So even when you go home and you're just really railing from the meeting and you have so many thoughts going on in your head and you're like, oh, I'm just going to talk to my husband about what happened, you can't. That's illegal. You can't talk to anybody about that closed session unless they were in the meeting. So you need to be really careful that you don't inadvertently talk about what was discussed in a closed session, even with somebody like your partner who you know isn't going to interact with the school. You never know when they're at Walmart and they run into somebody else, and then they ask something, and your spouse or your partner doesn't realize that it was closed session, and then they share. Anyway, so it's just really important that we only talk about closed session with those that are there. We can keep written minutes of a closed session, but they're not mandatory, so we always just recommend just recording it. And the only exception, when you don't have to even record a closed meeting, is when you're talking about the personal competency of an individual. On those, you can just sign an affidavit that says we're talking about X, Y, and Z. And I can send you a template of an affidavit that you could sign saying that you talked about the competency of an individual without recording it. Otherwise, plan on recording your meeting.
Quick question, excuse me. So from what I understand, we need to record the open meeting, which we do, right? Then if we have a closed meeting, which we have never had yet, we would also need to record it, but we don't need to upload it.
No, you would never want to upload it.
What do we do with that recording?
You save it forever and ever and ever.
Where?
And a judge with a signed subpoena comes to you and asks for it, then you would give it to them. But if it's not a signed subpoena order, then you just keep that for your own personal records forever.
Okay.
Lohan, we have a server right at the school.
We do.
So that would be a good place to save it.
Yeah, some people just get little MP3 players that they keep them on. There's lots of different ways. But you just want to hang on to that forever. It's rare that a judge will ask for that. Although I remember about 10 years ago, the judge asked and had a signed subpoena for closed minute meetings from the Jordan School District. There was allegations that they were talking about things not allowed in closed session, and it turns out they were. And so then all of that documentation was released to the public.
Okay.
So you do need to kind of think through a storage plan on that. And then just your regular minutes. Let's talk about minutes of a meeting for a sec. There's a couple different routes on that. I'm a huge football fan. My son-in-laws think it's just awesome that I love to watch football on Saturday afternoon. But my favorite football games are always BYU versus University of Utah. And I will sit through all 4.5 hours of that meeting as if I was there. Now, that's what your recording of a board meeting is. It's just like the whole play-by-play, everything that happened at that meeting is on the recording. Our minutes want to look more like the sports highlights that we see on the newscast that evening. It's going to tell me all of the key plays. It's going to walk me through each quarter, what the key plays were, where the scoring happened, who did the scoring. But it's going to take that 4.5 hour meeting down to like a 4 or 5 minute article on the news. And that's what your minutes need to be. They need to have who's in attendance, votes that were taken, discussion that happened. They should be enough that if we read the minutes, we would know what happened at the meeting. So if I happen to miss a football game, which doesn't happen often, but if I did, I could watch the news at night and I would have clear confidence that I could talk about it at the water cooler on Monday morning. I would have enough knowledge that I could explain the football game. What minutes should not be is like a newspaper where it just says BYU, Utah, University of Utah, the score is 34-31. We know they had a game, we know when it occurred, we know the end results, but we don't know anything else about it. So we want to make sure our meeting minutes just reflect a really good example of what occurred during the meeting, but they don't need to be a play-by-play and every word document.
Julianne, a quick question.
Uh-huh.
You talked a minute ago about retaining recordings of closed meetings, and you suggested that we keep those recordings forever, ever, and ever, and ever, I think you said.
Yep, and ever.
Isn't there a specific record retention requirement specifying the length to which that record must be kept?
I'm a little rusty on that, but I believe closed meetings are forever and ever. That those are permanent ones, that they don't just disappear. But I'll check on that, and I will send your board an email tomorrow on that.
That'd be great. If it's a specified period, be it 3 years, 5 years, whatever, I would think it important to not retain any records, including those, beyond the retention period.
Yeah. And then your regular meeting recording, I always recommend that you upload it to the public notice website along with your minutes and your financial report. That way, the public notice website now worries about all the retention on it. You don't have to keep track of it. It's in their system, and it's permanently archived according to the state of Utah laws and rules. So I just, after every board meeting, upload your recording, and then after the minutes are approved, upload those, and then record your financial reports. And then you don't have to worry about what format it's in, or if it's available, or who can access it. It's available to the public. They don't need to go through an individual to get them. They don't have to email the board chair at Esperanza to have the minutes sent to them. They can just look on the website. And then they maintain all of the archivable rules and laws. On open meeting, I would just upload those to the public notice website.
I have a question. Is there somebody that we can contact to give us instructions? Because, like, I know how to upload the agenda, but there's a format that I follow. Is there, like, a written instructions for minutes and recordings?
So there is a handbook on those, and I just actually got a copy of that via email yesterday, so I will forward that to you.
That's awesome. Thank you.
And sorry, speaking of minutes, I wrote in the chat who's taking notes, because Becky's not here, and I was a few minutes late to the meeting. Cody, are you taking notes, or who do you assign?
Where did Cody go?
Cody, you muted. Cody, you're muted. Cody, we cannot hear you because you are muted.
I was unmuted, but then the dog was barking. So,
okay.
Becky assigned me to take the minutes.
Okay, perfect. Sorry.
Yeah, she facilitated last time, and she's like, I'll facilitate for you if you take the minutes for me next time. Is there something specific you would like added to those minutes?
Oh, no, no, no. I just wanted to make sure that we are doing what we're being asked to do, because otherwise
okay.
we'd be very, you know, crazy or whatever it is. Yeah.
Julianne, another question. With respect to the open, the recordings of the open meetings, in addition, you suggested that we submit those to, what was the name of the body again that would store those on an ongoing basis?
It's the Utah Public Notice website. We always just call it the PNW.
And is there an obligation to store those with the Open Meetings website? Why would we want to do that?
So let me give you an example. So when I started with charter schools back in 2004, and we would have our recordings of the meeting, we were on little cassette tapes. And then we went to MP3 players, and then we did iPads, and now we just use computers. And in the archive rules, we would have to reconvert those into new formats as technology changes. So any floppy disks we had from that era, the CDs that we had, we would have to continually updating those.
So if any school opted not to store those in that webpage, but just on their own, is there a specified retention period, or is it, again, are you not sure what that is?
Off of the top of my head, I believe it's a permanent retention, that you are required to keep your public minutes forever.
I believe that's right. At least from my last training, I think recordings have a lifetime. Also, if we upload them to the state, we're giving them, you know, whatever's there is theirs now. It's their responsibility. We don't have to worry about it.
They take over that archival, making sure it's in the most current technology.
Kind of like our student files.
I'm just trying to, do we have an ongoing responsibility to update the technology? In other words, to put a cassette tape on a DVD or something?
Yeah, we do.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like our student files, Marty. It's kind of like our student files. Once we send them over to another school, then they're responsible for it. If not, we are the last known entity that has them, so we're responsible for them.
And you'll see schools will box them up and send them up to public archives.
Mm-hmm.
By uploading it into the public notice website,
we don't have to worry about it.
You're sending it to public archives.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like to me like it's a recipe to spoon feed any future critics that you might have that might want to second guess a year, 5 years, 20 years ago, an inadvertent mistake. It seems kind of nutty, but
We don't typically see that. There really aren't a whole lot of people that will go back and read minutes, but yes.
Well, like this last year, there's been a pretty healthy wave of healthy, broad-based criticism of charter schools in this valley, and we find all kinds of sometimes legitimate but sometimes bogus claims that are sometimes supported and sometimes aren't.
Currently, by Utah law, you do not have to upload your minutes and recordings to the public notice website. They do have to be made available to the public. And
if someone initiates a request.
Well, the Attorney General has defined available as not having to go through somebody to get access to them. So they should then be uploaded on your website, so somebody could simply get on your website and look for them.
Which they are, Marty. That's where we post them. We post them on our school website. So people can go on to esperanzaelementary.org and then go into board meetings, agendas, minutes, and then they can access all the recordings, all the agendas, all the minutes.
So it seems to me, again, to minimize their... I'm sure this is sounding like I'm paranoid, But after this last year, a lot of charter schools took a beating in the public view. It seems like we ought to do one or the other, but not both. If we're going to turn everything over to this state website, let's not keep it on our records, or conversely, let's keep it all on our own records and not double serve it up to the state website.
Yeah, you don't have to do both. You just have to do one or the other. I always recommend the public notice website because they'll take care of the archiving. And also, a lot of people in the public that are going to go after your school, they're going to look at your website first. They may not necessarily go back and look at the public notice website. So that would be one argument for the public notice website. But at the end of the day, if there's a critic and they want information about your board meetings, they because you're publicly funded, they have an entitlement to have access to that. So you can't hide them away in some dark filing.
Oh, entitlement. Entitlement is different than serving it up to them on a silver plate at their front door. And so my thought is simply to not facilitate access for critics.
Again, the law currently says that they have to be made available, and the current interpretation is of available is to not have to go through somebody to get access.
So I understand that. I understand that. I'm talking about one or the other, and it may be such a headache for us because we may I just don't know if we want quick access to our own minutes of open meetings, maybe that's, if we have to update them ourselves, maybe that's such a pain in the neck that overweighs, overbalances the risk of some future critic plowing through our files. In any event, that's helpful. Yeah. I appreciate it, Joylynn. I'll shut up on that point.
On that one, you know, keeping them on your own website right now is perfectly sufficient to meet the terms of the laws. And websites are such that we're not converting from 8-tracks anymore to CDs because we are all web-based. So probably just uploading it to your own website would meet the archivable requirements.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And that is my really quick and dirty open public meeting, is just to make sure we're doing the business of the public. I did want to go back to that first slide real quick. Whoops, I lost it. Because I did not cover that. I thought it would come up again. Let me see if I'm still... Let me share that one more time. There. So it does say that we have to do the business in public. So just, I want to clarify, if you're at the local Walmart and you're grocery shopping and your board is 7 people, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm seeing some nods. So 4 of you run into each other in the cereal aisle and begin having a healthy discussion. Should we buy Wheaties or should we buy Fruit Loops or I'm a really big Lucky Charms fan? That is perfectly acceptable. You can run into each other at Walmart. It's a social gathering. It's an inadvertent thing. You're having a discussion, but you're weighing the merits of cereal. If you run into each other in the chip aisle and you begin talking about, hey, I didn't like the way our test scores came in. Maybe we need to do X, Y, and Z to get better test scores. And do you think we should change the uniform code? Then we are talking about the school and doing school business now in the chip aisle at Walmart. And that is not acceptable. We're not doing their business in public at that point. Again, you can have a Christmas gathering and have a wonderful visit and discuss all of the different merits of the different holidays in December. But the minute you start discussing school business, you have crossed the line and moved into doing the public's business in a private situation. And so we recommend just a best practice. If your quorum is 4, if there are 3 of you gathered talking about the holidays in December, that if a 4th person comes, that somebody else kind of discreetly leaves. That way it never has the appearance of doing an incorrect business. Nobody can say, well, I saw 4 board members of Esperanza in the chip aisle, and they were having a heated discussion. I think they must have been talking about the school, not whether they should buy Fritos or Cheetos.
So,
and then
Oh, go ahead.
The last place we can sometimes get in trouble is on group emails. When somebody sends out an email of a policy and says, we'll be discussing this policy, and you read through it and you think, oh, we've got some things we need to change on it. So you list all the changes in the email and then reply all. So the next person gets on the email and they say, oh, look, we have this really fabulous uniform policy, and Fred thinks we should change the socks from red to white. I think that's a great idea. I agree. And they reply all. All of a sudden, we're having a discussion or deliberation of school business in private because the rest of our school community isn't participating on that email thread. So we always recommend just doing a blind CC. And that way, when you reply all, the only person you're replying back to is the sender. We're not having an inadvertent communication through a group email.
Okay, so now you were saying we're saving if the hallways at schools or social gatherings or these discussions happen with four or more, or even with two people?
With a quorum, which for your case would be four.
Okay.
So, but best practice would just be to only talk about school business.
Right. Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any other questions on that? Okay, I am going to send you, because this training was provided to you by a grant from the State Board of Education, and we are so grateful for their willingness to have these trainings. I am going to send you a evaluation, because the training was provided for no cost to the school other than you have to say if it was any good or if it was just terrible and never use JoyLearn again. And I'm okay with that. You just have to let us know. So I am putting right now in, let's maybe I am, in the chat where you can find that survey. And I will also send it to your board tomorrow, along with a sample of the affidavit and just a double check on the records on how long you have to keep recordings for closed sessions. Is there anything else I promised you that I would give you?
Super helpful. Thanks, JoyLearn.
Okay. Have a fabulous night.
Thank you, JoyLearn. Instructions on how to upload the recordings and minutes and stuff to the state website in case we decide to do that.
Okay. I will take care of that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us.
All right. So after that, typically the minutes we put on the public forum, but everything else we just put on our website. Is that what we've been doing?
No. So we put the agenda on the state website.
That's what I meant. I meant the agenda.
Yeah, we put the agenda and everything else we post on our school website.
Well, it sounded like from some of your comments, is that what we want to continue to do?
Well, it all depends on balancing. Do we want to not have to worry about archiving, then upload it to the website? Or do we want to, like Marty said, you know, do we want to do that? I don't know. I mean, either way is fine with me. It's just, for me, it's better because I don't have to worry about holding on to them.
Do we claw back into our old minutes and look at them?
I think we can, like, moving forward, if you guys want me to upload them to the state website, but everything else should be on the school website for as long as the school website is up.
Well, there have been a few times we've needed to go back and look at certain facts, but with our Esperanza board book, we've just been able to use it that way. So it didn't matter what or what was not posted.
So, public. I have to say that I'm a little, I appreciated JoyLearn, and she certainly is the expert in her bailiwick, and I don't pretend to, you know anything, certainly not as much as she does, but I'm really suspect of the idea that we have an affirmative obligation to proactively update the format on which our old minutes, open meetings are recorded. In other words, if we've been around for 20 years, I have a serious suspicion that we really wouldn't have to go back and put our cassette tape data on something on a web page that's more accessible.
I think we just need to have it available for the public. That's it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there is a mandate to transfer them from one system to the other.
So that said, if that's the case, I'm all for making Ari's work easy. And I'm also, at the same time, again, I know you're all thinking I'm being way too paranoid, but I'm not interested in serving up all of our minutes to the public. And it seems to me the easy alternative is for us to simply keep our own recordings of our open meetings in our own access so that we can claw back and look into them if we want to. So that that way, if we conclude that Ari doesn't have to go back and update the format on which they're recorded, then it's not, your work, I mean, this is not increasing your work, is it, Ari, if we decide not to send them onto the state?
No, not at all. I mean, it doesn't. Like I said, the only difference is archiving, us as a school archiving them versus the state. That's it. I mean,
how would you archive them?
Well, we would have them. We would have to have them available for the forever. I mean, our website. If we were to close down our website for any reason, then maybe we would put all the recordings and stuff into a USB, maybe, and then hold on to that. But that would be it. That's the only difference. It's transferring the responsibility to the state to archive them versus us.
Well, again, I don't want to overreact here, so I'll defer to how others feel about it. If it were my decision solo, I'd probably dispense with sending them to the state and just leave them on our system the way we would store them in the ordinary course if there were no such requirement.
Okay. And I think for now, we should just continue as we have been. Just keep them on our website, and if we change our minds in the future, we can talk about it then.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good.
Okay, perfect. Unless there's any other questions, let's go ahead and move on to Phil and the financial report.
All right. Well, let me see if I can find my information. I'm not as good at this as I should be, but I was going to go over our PTIF statement first. I don't think that's coming up, is it? Sorry.
I think Brian sent it to us on an email. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to click on, but it's not.
It's not coming up?
Phil, do you have access to the Esperanza board? Okay.
There it is. Can you see that okay?
No, you gotta share. Share your screen.
There it is. Does that come up now?
Yep.
Okay. So this is our EDIF statement of accounts. And the thing we went over as we looked at this at our financial meeting was just kind of where we're at in interest that we have gained. Of course, you can see that when we first opened this up in 2019, before COVID, with $600,000, we were doing pretty well with what we were getting in investment contributions. And as we increased that back in January, we added another $400,000. We're doing pretty well until about May when everything kind of dropped off. And so basically what we have seen as a gain so far since we've opened up this account is $14,286,000. Now in our summary, is the next thing I was going to share with you. One of the, share that.
We can see the summary now.
Oh, can you see the summary? Okay. It's going smoother than I thought. Then you can see that basically overall in our financials, without going into great detail, where we thought we would be with the BDIF summary would be about a $30,000 gain. So we're behind in that one area, and that's under our local revenues. But as you can see, in our state revenues, we're pretty much where we need to be. You know, we're only one, this financial statement is only 1 month